For April 8th, 2024, it's the Overthinking It podcast, episode 823. Man, that's a lot. Welcome to Overthinking It, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve. The Overthinkers are your smart, funny friends from the internet. And we're never happier than when we're together talking about the things we love. And sometimes we just come together and share. Sometimes we just come together and share with each other the things that we love. Because we've been out on our separate journeys, on our separate travels, on our separate sojourns around the world. And when we come back, we save the things that we found, the things we've collected, the things we've seen along the way. I'm Matt Rather. I'm joined by my good friend Peter Fenzel. Hey, Pete, how are you doing?
You know, Matt, I am doing fine. I'm feeling like we're ready to evolve to the next level.
Did Pete's audio just like double in volume?
maybe. I just got too excited.
Really? Sorry, really loud. There's a leveler on the final mix, but my goodness, I feel your excitement, Pete. I feel it in my bones, especially the bones of my head adjacent to my ears. Well, good. I'm glad we're ready. We're taking it to the next level. You and me. Mm. I'm glad.
Mm. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, you're good. No, you're good. You're good. You're fine. And hey, Pete, look, it's more hands. Mark Lee has joined us again.
That's right. Yeah. Speaking of things you feel in your bones, we had an earthquake here in New York City. We're catching up with you folks on the bleeding edge. We had a whole 4.8, Matt. Aren't you proud of us?
Yeah,
we messed up a whole 4.8.
I've been wondering, like, out here in Los Angeles, by and large, they don't mess around with adherence to the seismic codes. You know what I mean? They don't mess around with people building, like reinforcing or retrofitting masonry buildings or something, which are some of the most vulnerable in earthquakes. And like, you sort of can't pay someone off to get your construction project, just kind of waved through the, you know, the seismic inspections and things like that. Are they scrupulous about it, in New York? I mean, I know that your construction trades are among the cleanest and most heavily audited in the world, but are they?
I can't tell if you're serious or not.
No,
because the construction trades here have a notorious history of organized crime involvement. Also, I would add that we have had multiple parking garages kind of, you know, collapse recently. No, there's one with a fatality, and I think another one that was like, you know, emergency evacuated and things like that. No, like it's not great here, Matt. It's not great. So what I'm telling you.
My point is that, like, absent that, earthquakes can be really, really, you know, bad news. So yeah, I'm glad you made it okay. Did you see the water in your glass like shiver a little bit and wonder what was that?
As if I was in a park that was Jurassic. Yes, Matt.
Oh wow,
I had that phenomenal experience. It was wild. We'll get to it later in the podcast. But it was only the secondary of the kind of like, you know, very out of the ordinary experiences that my body has gone through over this last week.
Oh wow. Oh well. My God, if your body has been through extraordinary experiences, I want to hear about it. I want to hear about your psychedelic assisted therapy trips. I feel like that's the thing. So, you know, we all brought a little something to the table today, and a little something that we can talk about. You can call it a recommendation, or you can call it just a report from the field. I know Pete Fenzel has been deep in the mutant laboratories and has been researching, and just performing horrible acts on people with genetic mutations in order to test their responses to various kinds of stimulus. Pete, who have you tortured this week?
Who have I tortured?
Yeah, I mean,
oh man,
whose skeleton onto whose skeleton have you grafted adamantium?
So I wanted to talk about X-Men 97 because we haven't really talked about it. And this is maybe an opportunity where I can talk a little bit about something you guys have not watched. I wager you guys haven't watched X-Men 97, right?
No, but is it like a retro thing? Is it like Windows 95, but it's X-Men 97?
Windows 95 was not a retro thing on purpose. It was only a retro thing if you didn't get later versions of Windows. And you just hung out to it for a long time. I don't think there's like a market for retro. Is there a market for retro's Windows 95? I might have totally missed something here. But if I were to go retro on Windows, I would go 3.1. But that's just showing my age. But neither of you guys have watched any of X-Men 97, right?
No, sir.
Okay, so X-Men 97, just an explanation for people. It's been getting good reviews. I really enjoy it. I think it's great. X-Men 97 is a Disney Plus series that comes out once a week, half an hour show out once a week. Cartoon, I would even venture to say. It's an animated series, but I would even say that it is a cartoon. And it is a continuation of the X-Men, the animated series show that ended in 1997. It has a very similar style, and it has a lot of the same actors are in it. It has the same theme song in it, and it is remarkable. I just really, really like this show. Did you watch the old X-Men show?
No, sir, I did. I did not. So you're gonna have to catch. You have to catch in the continuity of the show. Is it still 1997?
Yes. So, yes, it takes. Well, it might be an idea. It's a year after the events of the previous show. So there's been a year that has elapsed.
Yeah, and, so they're all there being like, wow, guys, Bill Clinton is a really ambivalent figure in our nation's politics.
As you might know, the politics of the United States matter a lot in the X-Men world. And no, Bill Clinton does not make any appearance, nor does Bob Dole any particular. They have their own senators and their own congressmen and their own UN judges and ambassadors and stuff.
Bob Dole decides that Bob Dole makes an appearance in the Bob Dole persona and the Bob Dole cartoon, you know.
Strangely enough, Ross Perot is 70 feet tall and has the skin of a woolly mammoth with a thick pelt of hair.
I thought all his mutations were ear related. Wasn't he one of the? Yes. Wasn't he like a large eared gentleman, kind of like President Obama?
Yeah, but once Todd McFarlane got to him, it all got pretty crazy.
Oh wow!
This is like I'm not gonna say it's like a faithful recreation because it's more than that. It uses modern techniques, or at least it uses things that are available because of modern techniques, but it uses the old character designs, and it is so, I mean, I hesitate to use the word refreshing because it seems like an oversimplification, but it is a good feeling to watch a superhero show that so flagrantly discards all of the hand-wringing that has been taking place around the superhero genre since the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, right? So as an example, I want to give you an example, Matt, of a couple of things that happened in this show that shouldn't be big deals, but to me feel like big deals. This is a real overthinkable show, I think. I think this is a show that if you're an overthinker and you watch it, you will have a lot to watch. Every character refers to every other character by their mutant name. And not like in a sort of casual way, as in like imagine what the Avengers are like if Robert Downey Jr. walks in the room and says, "All right, I'm back from dealing with the Vision, Captain America. How have things been going in the room?" Right? They're like, "Hello, Iron Man. Yes, I'm working on this thing here." Right? So there's this whole melodramatic psychodrama that has really, or psychological drama, I don't want to diminish it because I've enjoyed so much of it and it's been so great. But the touchstone, the style, the dominant style of superhero storytelling since the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man has been this psychodramatic telling that really focuses on origin stories and really focuses on the person becoming the super person. And also with the super person's super person-ness being associated in some way with things that are happening in their real life, right? So it's like you have a person and they're dealing with person things, but then as a metaphor for that, they can also, encase themselves in a suit of armor that protects them from everybody around them and also gives them great destructive power, right? So like, oh, but he was doing that in his emotional life too. Aha, right? Man, this person is just a big hammer that just hits everything like a hammer and everybody has to deal with him. Oh, got it, right? That's not how X-Men 97 works. In X-Men 97, everybody is a mutant with a mutant power. And I'm not going to say it's the entirety of their personality, because we all know that the X-Men have these classic personalities, the classic X-Men. And the personality is constructed in a different manner. But it is the most important information you need to know about them at any given time. Is like, what is this person's name and what is their power? Because 90% of the scenes they're in are going to involve their power in some way, right? Like, so it's like, oh, that's Wolverine. Not 90%. It's more like 70 or 60% in this one, because they do take some liberties with it. And the scripts are more adult. And I don't mean adult in like a sexy way. I mean, like, one of the best parts of one of the episodes is, one of the best parts of the whole show is that Wolverine has been relegated back to being like a B-lister, at least in this part of it that I've watched. I've watched about half the season, and not all of it is out yet. So imagine, so it's your situation where Cyclops is a really main character, mm-hmm. right? Storm is a really main character. Jean Grey is a really main character. Wolverine is in it sometimes, and he usually has to stay at home because he's not really as like crazy zappy lasery as a lot of the other people. He usually like stays behind and guards things, and so there's a place in the show where Wolverine has to like drive a pregnant person to the hospital, right? and it's like, oh, Wolverine has to do it because he's the one who's left over. And I think if you sort of understand, okay, so much that has happened in these superhero movies, you know, Hugh Jackman has been Wolverine forever. Everybody's acknowledged that this is my favorite character. Wolverine's the best character. He has to be front and center for everything, right? Deadpool worships him. We're going to watch a movie of Deadpool worshiping Wolverine, you know, later this year. But no, he was a member of the X-Men, and we've gone back. We've really turned back the clock, and we've adopted these sort of structural norms these sort of personality norms from the way the old show used to work. Everybody refers to everybody by their mutant name. Wolverine is a relatively minor character, and the X-Men are all in their full-on yellow spandex jumpsuit stuff. The one change they've made is they have hamped up Gambit a bit, which, I mean, the whole thing is so incredibly camp, right? Like, when you watch it with some distance and you try to think, what was even going on? And you have to think that that's a question that people are asking themselves with love. I love this show. This show's great. Everybody loves this show who's ever watched it, especially the theme song. What is happening that they have arrived at the point where human beings are being drawn in this manner, doing this sort of thing? Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
No, I was just saying.
Sorry, you're agreeing
with
me on that.
Please continue.
So here's what I think. I think that the 90s in superheroes is the age of line. It is the age where anatomy has become extremely exaggerated in the superheroes, in the superhero genre, right, in comic books. But in particular, so much of everything is outlined. And so it's like, this is a one person's pec. This is their other pec. This is each one of their six individual abs that you will be watching, right? Like, here is their leg. There's the lines for all of their quadricep muscles, right? So like, this is the woman. Here's every strand of her hair, right? Mm-hmm. Like sort of, but it's the 90s. So like, this is swept this way. This is swept that way, right? Like, she's wearing glasses. So I'm going to go right, really dark glasses. I mentioned Todd McFarlane, a real kind of touchstone comic artist from the period. I think of him and his Spider-Man and Spawn, of course. But when you think about Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man, like the lines of Spider-Man's costume are really kind of tricked out, and the lines of his webs are kind of really, you know, out there and kind of dark. This is to contrast with the earlier Marvel superheroes, where the actual form of the superhero is it's more of a shape. Like, the superhero is kind of more of a shape and is less kind of filled in with these sort of like dynamic anatomical features. But the action, the movement has lines. There's big motion lines, right? Well, we're in an era of superheroes where, you know, if Cyclops is blasting something, like, there's a lot of lines for him blasting it. But there's also like a lot of lines that make up Cyclops. Mm. And also very bright colors. So we're still in a place where we're working with, I think I would suggest, lower quality printing materials than you come to to become accustomed to in the 2000s still. And still, you have that carryover from newsprint a little bit, but not really. But like, as in from the traditions of the earlier printing forms where you're like, you're hammering those yellows and blues. You're hammering anything that has a complementary color that pops out, right? Like Rogue has that one shock of white hair and that sort of rich dark mane that's all one color, right? So like, you're not really trying to add subtlety in the color. But it's the line that adds the detail. And the degree of camp that this introduces is like beyond. It's like kabuki. You know, it's like that, that it really reminds me of the experience. I mean, I listen to the way that my kids, you know, engage with media and that whole phenomenon of like, that's this person and they do this, right? Like each person only does one thing. You know, like, and each, you know,
I mean, I feel like that's true of us, right? On this podcast, each of us only does one thing, right?
I mean, that's true, but we do it so well. I only do one thing and it's not very, I'm the best at what I do and what I do isn't very nice. It's podcast forever. Bub, right? Like, so I think that when you're looking at this, you're looking at like, it's beyond, around and through the Adam West Batman. You know, the Adam West Batman at this point is 30 years ago, but has already sort of demonstrated that, you know, you've got the sort of you've gotten the Silver Age comic books. They've happened. We've sort of understood that Silver Age comic books are very silly. And we've sort of looped around for that, looking for a way to make this all more serious. And the 90s has arrived at like violence and adult situations, but the characters aren't really being presented in like full on naturalistic psychodrama as they will be later.
Sure.
Now, Magneto, for example, has a giant 5-foot M on his chest that hangs all the way to the floor and has a huge flowing white hair, right? Magneto is a big presence in this season, and he takes his helmet off a lot, right? And he's jacked Magneto with white hair like in the 90s. Genosha exists, right? And so it's like, what would this person look like if they were actually in, you know, in a live action movie? I mean, they would look like a, you know, Liberace, right? It would be like way over the top.
Nice.
In terms of like color and cut and flow and hair, you know, everything would be to the nines, but it's animated. So, and everybody is like that. So the question of like, what's the norm and what's the deviation from the norm is interesting. And like, then that also means that the interaction between the characters have this kind of operatic quality, where it's like this character does this and this character does that, and then and it's like you're not necessarily concerned with sort of how they got to what they're doing as much as you are like concerned with the notes that the show is hitting with having this character do this thing. And a lot of what the characters do is pretty intense. I mean, I already mentioned Wolverine taking a pregnant person to the hospital. But I mean, I don't want to go into the other stuff that happens, but like there's intense stuff that happens in this show and the writing is really good. I mean, it's a labor of love. And also it takes a little bit from the Spider-Verse in the sense that there is a mixture of techniques that is employed that does not seem particularly concerned with making everything homogenous. Like you have the scenes that look like the 90s X-Men show, but then every once in a while you get a sort of 3D-ish, almost cel-shaded, like Roy Lichtenstein influenced kind of pop art portrait with lots of light and shadow where you're supposed to really contemplate a character's face, right? And then sometimes you get 3D for the more complicated action sequences. You get like a little bit of 3D for a robot, right? Or for a piece of machinery or something. And also you jump in and out of frame rates. So there are things that feel like they're happening right now. And then there are things that sort of feel mythologized because you're watching like, you know, in a slower frame rate. So it's almost like you're seeing bits and pieces of the action and the sort of grander action. It almost feels like it's a story that's being told to you by somebody who saw it. It has that sort of meta quality at times. And then it has this really intimate, intense quality at times, but lacking in the sort of groundedness of a character who is always feels anxious and doesn't know if they really want to be a superhero. Like, no. Hi, Beast. Hello, my name is Beast. I am Blue. This is my laboratory. Like, I never think about not being Beast, like, because I'm Beast and it's awesome, right? Like, that's, and let's actually cut to the chase and talk about why we're in the laboratory examining this specimen, right? So I'm sorry, I could gush about the show for a lot longer than my share of the time.
Not going on, you haven't been going on, but you've been describing it, I think, in positive terms. And so I feel like I understand what the show is. I mean, positive as opposed to normative, right? Like, I feel like I understand what the show is. I wonder why, right? Is it because it's intended for children? Like, is it targeted at that? Or is it like, is this a rejection of the Tony Sopranoization of, you know, sort of action heroes or of, you know, of television kind of anti-heroes? Is this like a further step in the rejection of the Tony Soprano, Don Draper, you know, Ed Alia, type of hero where it's just like, I have two dimensions, not just visually, but also psychologically, right? Rather than being complex, anti-heroes that occupy kind of an ambivalent position in the moral universe of the show.
Yes. It would be like if somebody made the Lone Ranger movie, but just made it straight. As opposed to like, hey, let's make Johnny Depp Tonto and let's like sort of have half of it be kind of campy and half of it be kind of weirdly overly serious, right? Like, but you know, it's most similar, I think, not quite Batman the Animated Series, but more Superman the Animated Adventures. If you remember the old stuff that preceded and went into Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, those cartoons where they were using those mid-20th century lines, those sort of big, thick, square characters to tell the stories of like Superman and Batman and stuff. I mean, Batman the Animated Series is a kind of artistic endeavor that has a lot of influences. But when you get into like Superman and the Justice League, there's a really sincere appeal to the significance of what the art style represents in a sort of moral and cultural sense. Mm-hmm. I think just in terms of the solidity of it and the characters being admirable, and the way the music works. I mean, I think first and foremost, this is a show that's made by people who love the original show. Mm. Love it. And I think that they think that show is worth preserving. It's almost like I'm doing this show now before Disney can get to it and ruin it, right? Like but it seems like Disney's on board with it, which is even more interesting. But it's like it's almost like, okay, at some point we have to do the X-Men. Like Disney has to do the X-Men, right? And when they do the X-Men, they're probably going to change them because you have to change them. They change all the time, even in the comics. And this sort of feels like to me, we are not giving up on this sort of old style, and we want to we want to go deeper into it. Maybe that's really what it feels like, because it's like it feels like people think that there are things that the original X-Men animated series didn't go into with its style that it could have. And it's not like it's the only X-Men animated show between then and now. I mean, X-Men Evolution is not terrible, right? Like there's other X-Men shows. But they're like, this X-Men show, this art style, this time period, because it's a period piece also, you know, there's all more that this could say. So yes, it is rejecting the idea. I think that there is an anxiety in superhero storytelling where it's like, well, why would a person in the real world care about this character? And this show rejects that proposition entirely. And it basically assumes like, I already know you care about this, because this is awesome. And if you don't think it's awesome, I don't know where you're coming from, right? Like, I don't know what you could possibly be approaching this from where you don't think this is awesome. Now, granted, they make changes. You know, they make some improvements. It has political messages that are different than there used to be somewhat. They've updated things. But, I think there is a rejection of everything that's happened to superheroes since, or more just like a desire to use this style. Like it's more like it wasn't an evolution. It's like it wasn't like this show was replaced by other shows because the other shows were better than this. It's like this show was replaced by other shows because times changed and new artists came around and new people came around and they did different things. It's a very, I was just reading about this guy and I was going to make a really clever reference, but the anthropologist who is like responsible for at some point natural history museums used to depict different groups of people around the world as existing in a progression between people who are like, you know, Stone Age, Bronze Age, right? As they sort of develop. But these are all people who all live at the same time, right? Because there was a belief that, you know, Western civilization was the best and then everybody else was sort of developing towards it. And so a natural history museum would chart all of these steps. And now we don't really believe that at all anymore, right? We think that different peoples, have arrived and adapted to the places that they are, different paths, and you're learning about different groups of people, and they have kind of their own, and understanding them in their own terms. It's sort of an ethology of humans, and there's been a big shift in anthropology and in sociology even to understand these things. Granted, this happened a long time ago, but not that long ago. This is like that, but for 90s cartoons, where it's like, look, you think that this developed into the MCU. I'm just telling you that it was actually just in a different place in a different situation, right? And it is a culmination in and of itself. It does not need to be understood as a step on the way to something else, this particular style. Now, granted, I'm saying this, it's an exaggeration. They've progressed it a lot. It's got better. It uses computers, right? Because it saves a lot of time. And it also makes stuff more consistent and better. I think old cartoons in general don't really hold up that great. X-Men the Animated Series is good, but it's not as good as it was when you were a kid, right? In that sense, it's like, you know, things do improve. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, gosh, I wish you guys watched this show and you would understand. I mean, it's like,
no, it's, yeah. you're a great advertisement for it. I just want to say that, like, the difference between the Natural History Museum kind of progression narrative, right? The teleological, society's narrative, and the kind of human diversity. The teleological one is more awesome. It is more awesome, right?
If you're one of the people at the end of the story, people that's being told, you're the pinnacle of civilization.
I'm going to the Natural History Museum in my town, right? Like, and it's like, yeah. Oh, you know, there were people in Jamestown and they had a society, and then there were people in New York and they had a society, and then they moved west and there were people in, like, I don't know, Cleveland or something. And then they moved west some more. And finally, they've gotten to Los Angeles, the pinnacle of all human civilization. And that's, you know, that's what we have in our...
It's just a statue of what, like Bruce Willis? Like,
yeah, exactly. Like at the top of Nakatomi Plaza, throwing Alan Rickman off, right? And like, and you look out the window and you can see the actual building and the distance used for Nakatomi Plaza. And I am here. I am among the elect. You know, among the elect of God, here in this Natural History Museum. I get what you're laying down, Pete. I mean, I know that it's kind of like, it's kind of like you're spinning and you're trying to start the lawnmower and it's not catching, but, we appreciate the vigor with which you are pulling the cord. And that is the, that might be the engine that gets us to watch the show. So, Pete Fenzel, X-Men 97. And, if the 90s, so hot right now, they'll have those, Jennifer Aniston feathered haircuts, you know,
Franz Boas. That's who I was thinking of, Franz Boas. But anyway.
Look, if we're really going to do
90s, Cyclops, and Storm, guys, and Jubilee. Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, if we're really bringing the 90s superhero stuff back, like, wake me up when there's a proper Joel Schumacher-esque Batman revival. I am so here for that, because that stuff was just absolutely nuts. Like, this, we think of it as a strange aberration that happened, but like, to your point, Pete, like, you know, that was a different way of doing, a very different way of doing superhero movies, and there's not just one way of doing superhero stories, portraying them on screen.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, that film was fantastic, and I went with friends of ours to the Joel Schumacher Phantom of the Opera that came after the Batman movie, and they walked out thinking, kind of like mildly embarrassed by it because it is so extremely over the top, but they were wrong and we are right, and Joel Schumacher was awesome.
Now, you are aware that we're talking about Batman Forever, right?
Yeah.
Are you thinking about the Tim Burton Batman as the awesome?
No. We're talking about Batman Forever for sure.
Okay, good.
As long as you're freeze, Arnold.
Nipples on the bat suit.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. Contemporaneous with the X-Men animated series for sure. Yeah,
exactly.
Mark, Mark, what do you bring to our table, to our little digital campfire? I noticed you weren't talking for a minute. Were you tired, Mark? Were you a little sweepy?
Yes, as was I, but more importantly, other people in my household. But let me just kind of give myself a segue from the earlier thing I was talking about, right? Which is, speaking of being dislocated from your body and feeling like things are off, I'm not talking about the earthquake, which was a whole special and weird thing that happened to us in New York City. No, I'm talking about the horrible phenomenon known as jet lag. You guys heard about jet lag, the cool thing that everyone's doing that causes your children's sleep patterns to be horribly disrupted and also for you to experience crippling levels of fatigue? You guys heard about this?
Is that when you voluntarily go through daylight savings time multiple times in one day?
Multiple times over the course of like a week and a half.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Yeah,
it's like that.
Yeah, it's truly terrible. Okay, all right. So let me just like rewind the clock here and say what's going on.
I have no children, and I am still recovering from daylight savings time. I don't know how you people do it.
Oh, we're keeping you in our thoughts and prayers, Matt.
Thank you.
We really are. Okay, so here's the story. Right? You might have noticed I was off of the podcast the last few weeks. The reason is because we took, at this point, is becoming our annual family trip to see relatives in the great island nation of Taiwan. Oh, did I say nation? Is it a country? I mean, no, it's not a country, guys. It's not a country. We've already established this podcast should be banned in the People's Republic of China. So just putting that out there. We went to Taiwan. For those of you keeping score at home, that is an entire 12 hours away from Eastern, at the time, standard time. Now it was kind of Eastern Daylight Time. Actually, 13 hours away. Okay. We're not going down that separate rat hole. But anyway, 12-hour time difference. And it absolutely wreaks havoc on your sleep schedule, as you could possibly imagine. And then if you add on top of that small children, who when they wake up at 3 a.m., because their bodies tell them it is not 3 a.m. and it's time to wake up and need entertainment, you cannot simply just, you know, fall back asleep or simply rest. And so, you know, it's one thing to deal with after you arrive there and you are ostensibly on quote unquote vacation. That is to say, you do not have like professional responsibilities to attend to. You're just kind of there to entertain the children and see family and do sightseeing and all that kind of stuff. It is one thing to deal with it in that set of circumstances. It is a completely different thing to come back home and then have to deal with school and work responsibilities. And that was when the real fun began. And everybody was extremely tired and cranky over the course of the last week. And we're kind of just now pulling over that out of that, although not entirely, which is why I had to go attend to a small crying child in the middle of the night, because her sleep schedule has not fully reset. Again, this is pushing well over a week after having returned to Eastern daylight time. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah,
we're in Eastern daylight time. Yes. We're back in Eastern daylight time, not Eastern Standard Time. You horrible people who put EST. After a time.
Yeah, people who say EST in meeting requests or emails when during daylight saving time are history's greatest monsters. It's true.
Indeed, history's greatest monsters. Shortly after, whoever decided that human beings could travel at such great speed over great distance that they could experience this horrible phenomenon as jet lag. Anyway, the reason why I'm bringing this here is because like this is the thing that has just utterly dominated my mind and my body over the last like 10 days or so, just recovering from jet lag. And I was kind of thinking about like what I talk about when I talk about jet lag, the kind of the utter banality of having to talk to other people about your jet lag. You just like have such a poor frame of reference of being able to relate to this feeling, and yet must also express their sympathy for you. And this is both kind of in a social and in a work setting. And I kind of wanted to overthink this with you guys, right? When you hear me complain about the horrible jet lag that I'm going through, do you think, oh, Mark, poor soul. My pity extends to all the way to the, you know, to the Pacific Rim and back to you, or are you just like, I would literally talk about anything else up to and including Joel Schumacher, Batman suit nipples, which is it, guys?
I mean, be honest. That sounds like that's a very black and white thinking way of thinking.
Well, but Matt, he's been traumatized. That's why he's thinking.
That. Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, it's hypervigilant and yeah, absolutely. But that, yeah, Mark, I think that it is part of the category of things that is just kind of like bog standard, kind of normal experiences, and really doesn't amount to a hill of beans in the crazy mixed up world. But that in your life,
how many Americans travel, you know, from the East Coast to Asia, and back. Like, it's not that many. It's not the norm.
I don't know. JFK's a busy airport, right? Like, there's a lot of, I mean, I guess it's not the norm when you consider hundreds of millions of people living in the nation.
Yeah, I would also add, it's not the norm to travel.
Is the answer. 6.2 million, I mean, at least according to the Tourism Academy. Yeah.
That's a lot, you know? Maybe it's not a lot in the context population of 300 some odd million.
Hey, I'm trying to accentuate my suffering here. How many of these people traveled with 3 and 5 year olds?
Oh, they're all 3 and 5 year olds. You were the only adult to do it.
Yeah, there's
it's all just children flying the planes.
Doing it wrong.
They they do an amazing job. I mean, you would think they don't even have the motor control to operate those sensitive instruments. There's a whole class of things, Mark, I think that, like, actually having children falls in this category itself, right? That, like, in the scheme of things, it's the most normal thing in the world. It's the most unremarkable thing. You know, the whole premise of having children is how the species keeps kind of perpetuating itself on through the generations, right? Like, on a geologic time scale, it's barely an eye blink. And yet, you know, when you zoom into the scale of your life, it's hard to imagine anything that is more consequential, that is more kind of like earth-shatteringly changing such an enormous, you know, change in evolution in your life. And I think that like, I don't know, sometimes being able to, like, be at peace with my fellow man requires that, you know, I am at peace with my fellow man to the extent that I can accept this idea, hold this dichotomy in my head, that, like, you know, the thing that you're talking about is like extraordinarily consequential for you, but of little to no consequence for me. But exactly. I feel like, you know, for you, you know, you are my close friend, and I don't mind listening to you talk about your, I mean, you listen to me bellyache about my nonsense all the time, weekly, as it happens, right? Like, so I, you know, I don't know. I think there is are you saying, you know, does your pity extend, you know, or does your sympathy extend? And it's, I feel like, well, I sympathize, but I'm not sure it extends. You know what I mean? Like, I sympathize right where I'm sitting. You know what I mean? I sympathize, you know, without that. Now maybe I'm a moral midget, and you know, that's a terrible thing to say, but I don't, but, you know, I don't know, at least I'm being honest. Pete, do you feel bad that Mark is jet lagged?
Well, I mean, I do, but I don't think that's the point. I feel like there's a couple of different ways to go with this. One of them is to go into the whole thing about parents complaining to other parents about having kids, and then people who don't have kids complaining to people who don't have kids about the parents who are complaining to them, and mm-hmm. then the sort of general failure to reconcile all of that. I don't know if I have the solution to that particular problem. I could also suggest that people do often say to me, I can't complain, and I don't believe them.
That is one of history's greatest lies, for sure.
But here's another thing. It is interesting to be discerning about the flavor and quality of your socialization, right, with your friends. It is interesting to be like, well, okay, I saw my friends today and I talked to them, but the conversation wasn't that good, right? Like, it wasn't a great conversation. I wanted to talk about something more interesting. I wanted to talk about something that enthralled me more. I wanted to talk about something that, you know, like, oh, I saw a bunch of my friends today and they were all talking about this Malcolm Gladwell book, and I don't find it that interesting. You know, and we all have an experience. And I think that, and I don't want to decry the state of being blessed with a surplus of social time, right? Like, because it's awesome and you don't know it's awesome. Well, it's not awesome. It has its downsides too, because it's very easy to lose track of where you are in the whole mess. But, you know, if I ask Mark, how are you doing? And he tells me, I'm really jet lagged, and we're doing this now in our life today, I am grateful to be talking to Mark, not just because I like Mark and I don't get to talk to him as much as I used to, but also because I desperately need socialization with other adults, right? Like outside of my job, I make small talk because this is important to connect with people, you know, and I think that it's a necessary thing to have this, you know, battery charged. I mean, again, I'm an extrovert and the pandemic has been really hard for me. I mean, I hate to say that. I don't really believe in like extroverts versus introverts. You know, obviously I think you have a relative need for these things and it can change given the time and the situation, the people you're talking to. Obviously there are preponderances. This is all me being pedantic, but of course that's kind of what you signed up for.
Yeah, that's the show, Pete.
But as a shorthand, right, as somebody who's pretty extroverted most of the time, I've really, really needed more time to socialize than I've gotten for years. And I think that what this has given me is not necessarily like, oh man, I'm so hungry. The hunger of loneliness is the best seasoning for stories about jet lag, because I don't necessarily think, because not even really loneliness, but because you can also socialize all the time and still be lonely. But I think that's also sort of what I'm talking about, right? Is like, what's the kind of socialization that you have where you don't feel lonely? And I don't necessarily think it's the one where people are talking about the coolest book. You know, we're talking about the most interesting thing. But I think it also might benefit from you acknowledging that that's the kind of socialization that you're doing. That, like, I am talking to my friends because I want to feel close to them. I want to know what's going on. And I want to kind of open myself up to that engagement. And if all we're talking about is jet lag, that's fine, right? Because also, I understand what it's like to have jet lag, and it's hard to talk about other things. I feel like this is like a greatest hits of story two-handers, too, because it's like, remember the podcast we did about dental pain? Where it's like, when you're really in pain, it's really hard to like think or concentrate on anything else, right? Like, and a lot of the fiction around pain is like not very accurate to the experience of actually being in pain above a certain threshold, right? Like, you know, if Mark is really badly jet-lagged, you know, then that's what he's thinking about. And to connect with Mark, that's what I have to talk about. And that's fine. I mean, granted, we can also talk about X-Men 97 for half an hour, which, you know, we just did.
Mark won't be able to concentrate on that. He won't be able to think about or concentrate on X-Men 97 because he's so fatigued. He's jet-lagged, you know?
I guess my question is, are you connecting? Oh, sorry, Mark, go ahead. You're a little bit behind because of the time difference.
There you go. Well, double play, Pete. Another way of asking the question that I'm asking here is like, you know, when we are talking about X-Men 97 and working out a way to relate to it, I think collectively Matt and I have a better frame of reference for it and a day-to-day basis compared to Mark Lee being jet lagged for 12 hours and also dealing with jet lag 3 and 5-year-olds. If we accept that as true, then it's like, what is there something particularly like kind of dumb or banal or alienating about talking about jet lag specifically? Because not a lot of people like go through this specific type of jet lag, and also like you like, because it is this like very intense physiological thing, it's hard to relate to.
I feel like a couple times in my life, and Matt, step in. I've been lucky/unlucky enough to be exposed to something that has totally skewed my frame of reference for the whole rest of my life. One of them was going to Yale, of course, which totally screwed my frame of reference for the entire rest of my life in ways that are useful to me and sometimes not useful to me, right? Like, I'm not, you know, like, what does it mean? You know, everybody is talking about who gets to go to the elite schools. It's like, it doesn't matter. I have friends go to elite schools or couch surfing, and like but again, that's my perspective, right? And that's not everybody's perspective. And it's obviously, you know, if you were to draw back and have an objective perspective, it would be different. But one of the other ones was that my dad did a lot of business traveling when I was young and would take me along sometimes, and some of my other sisters. And so like, I was exposed to jet lag a lot as a kid. And so I know pretty well what it feels like, and it doesn't feel strange to me. It sucks. I also had I think it was The Way Things Work book. Did you guys have that book? Great book.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it like, it had like cutaways, right? It had like big illustrations, cutaways.
Yeah.
and this might have been a cutaway in a different similar book, but I think it was in this book where there was an explanation of what jet lag was. It might have been a similar book, and a lot of books like this, where it was like they showed you all the different body clocks in the human body, and they showed you how they become out of sync when you cross like large numbers of time zones. And it's like you have one that's like your circadian rhythm for your sleeping, and then you have one that's like, you know, in your brain, and the one that's in your, and the one in your kidneys is the one that gets you. That your kidney clock is the last one to change, and that's one of the things that makes jet lag particularly tough, because kidneys, it's when you go to the bathroom, right? So like you go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you don't want to, that kind of thing. And also that would have bothered kids, you know, because they're waking up to pee in the middle of the night in their diapers.
I'm a man in my 40s, and I go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and I don't want to, you know, so I don't understand how it would be much different from the way that I'm living now.
But I guess what I'm saying is that I can imagine, and I would guess, that it kind of sucks to have someone tell you that they went on this awesome vacation and now they have jet lag if you've never gotten to go on an awesome vacation. That I think is the one. The two things that stick out to me are, one, people who don't have kids don't really care about how much it sucks to have kids, even though you love them, and how you've changed your paradigm about pleasure and pain in your life in like a huge fundamental way.
There you go.
Right? Yes, like nobody cares who doesn't have kids. Everyone who has kids understands what I'm talking about. Oh, it's like you have to take the good. It is not an option to not appreciate the good things in your life while they're happening, right? Like, because the bad things are also always happening, right? Like, so you know, there's the whole click Adam Sandler thing. Like, you've all been educated in it, right? You can't skip the bad times because then you skip your whole life, but you also can't skip the good times because you skip your whole life. You know, like it's just part of having these, you know, irrational beings being this huge presence, you know, in your life. And so like, I would get how somebody complaining about this, oh, my kids are keeping me up all the time. I don't care. I don't have kids. I don't care. None of this matters to me. And you talk about it all the time. And I often feel unlistened to because you only talk about your kids and you never listen to me talk about my life, you know, going on Tinder all the time. Right. And like, like I'm trying to play fantasy football and go on Tinder and you're always talking about your children. Right. Like, or whatever it is that kids talk about these days. If it's not fantasy football and Tinder, it's probably some other dating app called like Goober or something. I don't even know because I'm a curmudgeon. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's either that you have kids and you're having a kid conversation, or that you went on a fancy trip and you're having a fancy trip and now you're complaining about it in your conversation. Those would be the ones that would bother me more than the idea that jet lag itself is boring. Because pain is fun to talk about, right? Like, oh man, like I had a tree fall on my house. Like, what? Oh no. Like, oh, this sucks. The weather's terrible today. Yup. And it's like, yeah, in retrospect, it's boring. But at the time, hey, you know, let's all talk about the thing that sucks. You know, you can't complain. You can if you want, as far as I'm concerned. But maybe that's the New Englander in me having moved here, you know, at this point, almost 20 years ago. I don't know, Matt, what do you think? You're from a sunnier part of the country. Do you like complaining? Do you like to talk about complaining about petty nonsense?
No, I mean, I think that we, you know, I look at these things as opportunities to grow, Pete. Ooh, and to, you know, that's why we're the evolved diorama. In the,
are you being mindful and thinking about how much you want to throw up because you haven't slept for 4 hours? If you're aware of how much you want to throw up, then it will pass through you and only the throw up will remain. I don't want my throw up to pass through me. I guess I do, because then it becomes poop. But I don't want to go the other way.
I see. Because so when I'm having like the worst headache of my entire life, and I'm not even exaggerating, that's what mindfulness is about, because I can only think about my mind. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
Didn't you watch Dune? Jeez.
Yeah. you're saying that children are the are what? Oh, I thought you were saying I will not procreate. Children are the mind killer. I think you said something earlier, Pete, that I think wraps this up in kind of a nice way, which is about kind of the social aspect of this, right? And I think that like it's not necessarily I think it's good as a friend. You want to take it to a place where it's sort of beyond like, is this boring to me or not? You know, and speaking of mindfulness, just be like, hey, this is what's going on with my friend right now, you know, right? Like, and I can sort of be present. I can sort of be present with my friend, right? While they're going through this, like in this state, and just sort of allow that to be, you know, without necessarily needing needing to put a ton of narrative on it without necessarily needing to like make it, you know, oh, this is a thing to define myself like vis-a-vis this phenomenon and my feelings about it, right? Like, oh, like, okay, this is a good thing that I care about, or this is a bad thing that I don't care about, or like, oh, this person is already, you know, oh, they're always going on about their kids, right? Like or they're always going on about their fancy vacations, you know, they're always going on about, you know, I don't know, going
about to how jet lagged they are.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Like that strikes me as like a fundamentally unfriendly attitude. And even if, you know, even if in a, like, were you to kind of subjected to, you know, a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve, you'd be like, oh, this is, you know, I don't think this is something that I am, I don't think this is something that I am, really all that interested in. I think your primary duty is not to kind of evaluate the thing vis-a-vis your interest, and your primary duty is to kind of be a pal, right? at those moments. And so, you know, I don't know, the social aspect of it strikes me as really the important one. I don't know, rather than an analysis of how it does. And I will tell you, like, the phrase that I have, like, in all good faith started adopting in conversations like this, right, is man, that's a lot. You know, and like,
that's perfect.
And like, so that's many perfect things, you know, like, and it's so many things that I see my friends go through, right? Where you don't want to, like, you don't necessarily want to take a discursive position because it doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't help, right? Like, it is not part of being a good friend, right? Like, it's not part of what's called for in your care for the people of your life that you, like, necessarily, like, evaluate discursively all the things that are going on. And sometimes you just kind of, like, acknowledge, you know, I mean, you know, you like to joke about mindfulness because you had dental surgery this one time, but like, the kind of the core tenet is like, evaluate, you know, acknowledge what is real, right? That's the thing. And like, I don't know, man, Mark, like taking an international trip, like, you probably had to like be at the airport at some ungodly hour of the day or night, you know, and like traveling and trying to entertain children on a long flight, and you know, dealing with all of that stuff, and like, man, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. And I feel for you, man. That's a lot.
I appreciate that, Matt. And I'm going to take from this conversation that I should reorient my entire personality around my jet lag.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'll just play that character. That'll be
you should just wear one of those pillows around your neck all the time when you show up places. Well, I just got off a plane. I'm so jet lagged.
Yeah, I'm gonna start to wear makeup to accentuate the bags under my eyes, which I actually kind of don't need because that's the point of the earlier conversation. I'm a parent. I'm exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. Can we talk about something else, Matt? Please, yeah, like, literally anything else other than my jet lag.
Sure. I want to cast you back, actually, kind of to the 90s, to a nostalgic thing. You know, I don't know.
Please.
It's, we do like a variety of things kind of under the banner Overthinking It, and they're siloed. Like, they don't necessarily interact. They always used to kind of interact under the rubric of like having a blog. But like, we don't really have a blog anymore. And so like, we operate this YouTube channel, and every year about this time, we do a bunch of video reviews, about the Eurovision Song Contest entries for that particular year. And this is something that our friend Matt Belinky has been interested in a long time. And you know,
that's
the
a bit of an understatement, Matt.
he's been a little interested.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? you know what I think about Matt's interest in the Eurovision Song Contest? I think, man, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
But no, it is delightful. It is also delightful viewed through the lens of our friend Matt, who has, you know, always has unique takes on it. And it's fun to do. And we end up producing like videos, talking head videos, you know, reviewing these things. And I end up emceeing most of these. And so I have a little like video shooting setup, and I replaced a lot of it. this year. I had, you know, some equipment that was kind of like getting on about 10 years old, and it was time to let some of it go and to like embrace like 4K video and stuff. And so I ended up like buying, returning, and then buying other electronic equipment. And like it took me back to a place that I haven't been in a long time. I remember, you know, my dad and I used to go together to Fry's Electronics, you know, and we would like look, going to the electronics store, even to like a Radio Shack was like a fun thing. And you would look at like components, you know, and I briefly like flirted with learning to solder and learning about like electronic circuits and stuff like that. And you know, putting things together, like resistors on boards and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And all that stuff was fun. And it has completely, my life has never been more computerized. And yet my interaction with computers, even as a person who does like computer programming for a living, has never been more kind of superficial, more surface, right? Like, cause you know, I have a laptop computer and I have an information phone, and that's the extent of it, right? Though, you know, the washing machine is a computer, and the computer in my washing machine failed recently. And though the washing machine was perfectly good because this computer had failed, it would have cost more to replace the computer in the washing machine than it cost to like buy six new washing machines. So now I have six washing machines, and they're humming away doing my laundry right now, right? And so like buying camera gear, buying like electronic components and stuff like that, and like wiring them together in a way that's not just like running a program on Mac OS, I don't know, it's been a very different experience, and a nostalgic one for me, kind of a return to a time when things electronic were greeted with a certain amount of enthusiasm rather than being just thought of as an appliance, you know, just thought of as like a surface upon which I work or, you know, communicate or something like that. And I think it's like, I don't know, a lot of stuff, like the word app actually has a lot to do notionally with this, right? Like app is short for application, and you think of the applications of computers, right? Like video chatting with your friends or recording a podcast together, audio chatting and recording it is an application of computing, right? Like I don't know what, like a Google Doc, right? It's an application of all this electronic and computing stuff. But dealing with the electronics as objects, you know, things that are outside, like dealing with the terrible, terrible interface on this Sony mirrorless camera that I ended up getting to shoot videos, right? Like has been a different thing. I don't know. Like, do you guys buy electronics anymore? Is that a part of your life? Like, is there a, you know, is that, do you even know what I'm talking about? Mark, you gotta know what I'm talking about a little bit, right?
I'm sure we talked on this podcast about how I built a gaming PC, in 2020 during the championship season. Right.
Oh, right. And yeah, that's exactly the right yes. Level. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Extremely satisfying. Kind of, you know, and getting to know the components and how your computer works at a very deep level. But it's also like speaks to this notion of working with technology in that, like, the process, the value you get out of the experience is not just the ultimate thing you're trying to do at the end of the day, which is like make a video or play a video game. It's setting the whole damn thing up and dealing with the perverse pleasure of problems coming up and fixing them. It scratches a certain itch to kind of like know of a universe that you have created and are responsible for in this kind of deep way, as opposed to just like,
I thought this was deleted
an app.
This was not going to be about having children. God, now it's this universe that you've created and you're responsible for in a deep way. Damn it. I'm ready to be a parent. Oh, I never knew. I didn't think. Crap. But do you, yeah, I mean, like, but I remember, like, buying gear was a part of my life, and now I kind of have a phone, and there's no real gear anymore, you know?
Oh, yeah, I would also add to that the time when I was, like, very much more into playing electric guitar, and that, was, that was very much also about buying the gear, fiddling with it, assembling your setup, your system, and just, like, fussing and fit and fiddling over it, and feeling like it was a certain extension of yourself, both the kind of the physical objects and the time and effort.
Yeah, I mean, because what did you have? You had, like, you had the guitar body, you had the strings, you had the pickups, the amplifier, your pedal board. Yeah, exactly.
The pedals, yeah, yeah. Every single one of those things you can futz over and think about how it's affecting the broader system and the product you're getting.
That's a great one. And actually, like, all kinds of people learn electronics in order to kind of mess with, in order to, you know, do some, like, homebrew mods on their pedals and stuff, or to, you know, put stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I never got to that level, but it's kind of the same phenomenon.
Never busted out the old soldering iron. Yeah, I guess, like, the more you have hobbies that touch on this stuff, the more you'll get into it, you know. Whereas, like, I guess as you get older, there's less time for stuff like that, and, like, I don't know, maybe I guess I make coffee every day, and so I have, like, a fancy coffee grinder, and maybe that's the replacement for it in my life, and it's a side of how, you know, I don't know, my pursuits have become less frivolous, and so I've brought frivolity into the pursuits that I pursue.
This is a bit of a tangent, but it's also worth bringing up, is that, like, apparently in the zeitgeist is this, I'm not gonna say dumb, but kind of fluffy New York Times article about appreciating instant coffee.
Yeah,
there was this time in my life when I loved to futz with the setup, and, you know, got pleasure from this, that, and the other, and the ritual as well. But now I don't have time for that, and so drinking instant coffee is better than not drinking coffee. Kind of the end.
Did you see that one? Yeah, I did. I sent it to our friend and the co-host of the TFT podcast, Ryan Sheely, this morning. I sent it to him, and he replied with a slogan from the straight edge community. If you're familiar with the straight edge community, it's the community of non-drinking, non-drug taking, punk rock and hardcore music fans. I think it kind of grew out of the, like, Washington DC scene, and I asked him if his taste for artisanal coffee has soured somewhat, you know, given the lack of time, since becoming a parent. And he replied with a slogan from the straight edge community, which is, if you're not now, you never were. that's how he felt about and I hope I have his strength should my time come, you know, that I will keep up the thing. I'll tell you, here's a coffee hack, you know, on our Life Hacks podcast, is if you want, like, a artisanal, yeah, pardon me, God, who even am I anymore, if you want an artisanal coffee experience, make a big pot of cold brew concentrate at the beginning of the week, and then you can have, like, you know, relatively superior, certainly like 90th percentile coffee throughout the week without a great deal of fuss, because you only have to heat water and pour it in, or just pour milk in and have a nice latte. Pete, do you, before we wrap up, Pete, do you buy gear? Do you buy electronics? Is that a part of your life? I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I have a couple ways I can answer it. One is that I buy appliances. Which is, like, it's like computers, but no fun at all, and much more expensive.
It is. Your washing machine is a computer, man. Your dishwasher is a computer. It's
it's better really... be mining Bitcoin, because it sure ain't working. But yes, it's but no, I've learned, I don't know. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast at all, but, I live in a home that's a little bit, at one point was a little bit off the grid and is less off the grid than it used to be, but it's still not entirely on the grid. And one of the things that we have is we have propane for our cooking. and we have had no end of problems with the propane in our house. And we've had to evacuate because of carbon monoxide problems, and you know there's no vent, and you got gas leaks, and it's just been a huge pain. And you know, we're trying to figure out how to like go electric and get away from it, or how long we have to deal with it. And I did say, while dealing with the most recent propane crisis, that, you know, I never thought when he said it, I didn't take it seriously that he was talking about a thing that really existed. And I also had no idea how much it would really affect my life. But, you know, it's a real thing. Propane and propane accessories are real things.
I knew Hank Hill was going to come up. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I have had a vast amount of firsthand experience with propane accessories over the course of the last 3 months. And I'm glad to talk to anybody about them because, as I've mentioned, complaining is a form of socializing and I'm starved for it. So it's I can't complain. I can't about propane. But I will say
Matt, that sounds like a lot.
Oh man, I think the other thing that I would say is that other than just that I my mom got me some Kraft instant coffee that I drank, not like K with a C, like from Kraft, but like made by Kraft, and it's pretty good. So I wouldn't necessarily decry instant coffee of the fancy and unnecessarily expensive variety either, but you know, you guys know that my PC had its life flashed before its eyes earlier this week, or even earlier this day. As I've had to, this thing is pretty old, and it's sort of kicking along, right? And it's a nice PC. I've gotten gradually nicer PCs. I still get, you know, desktop. I, you know, build them a little bit myself, buy them a little bit myself, pre-made from others and stuff. I get these desktop PCs. And having a desktop PC has been a sort of marker of my personal space for a real long time, and also of like the stuff that I do. Like, I want my PC to be able to edit video. I want my PC to be able to do podcasts. I want my PC to be able to play cool video games. And like, and the more that I've done in my life, the more I've wanted my PC to be able to do. And I'm at the point now where I've also bought a cheap laptop that I bring to meetings. So I have a work laptop that I use for work, and then I have a cheap laptop that I bring to meetings that aren't associated with my job, and that I use for like budget planning when I'm like chatting with my wife about budgets and I don't want to have to do it at my desk. And it's like, man, do I really need this desktop computer anymore? Like, if I'm willing to give up Tekken, let's hypothetically say I was willing to give up Tekken, would it be worth it to me to buy another desktop computer, or should I just try to get by my laptop? Because all the things that I used to do on here, I don't do nearly as much anymore. Like, I don't make videos myself anymore. You know, like, I haven't done it in years. I would, but I have kids, right? So it's sort of like, is this part of my life gone? And it really has confronted how like the tangle of wires, which I still see in front of me, because this thing has been jolted alive, like, you know, Victor, son of Frankenstein, right? It's like it's still with us. It ain't heard no bell. But man, that's sort of, we've already talked about the palimpsest of my desk on the podcast, and all the wires are sort of a perverse circulatory and nervous system for this like expression that's taking place. So yes, Matt, I buy gear all the time. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. A lot of the time it doesn't. A lot of times it's pretty old, but so am I. And I still work last time I checked, so I guess that's all right. Cyclops.
Well, yeah, I mean, there you go with the X-Men 97, with the jet lag, and how do you share sort of what's going on in your life with the people you care about, and with the kind of the trying to recapture some of the nostalgia of pursuing a hobby, Pete. I can't think of a better wrap up to it than I still work, so I guess I'm okay. I guess that's okay, and I guess that's an okay episode of the Overthinking Podcast. Thanks everybody for listening to us. We appreciate that you do it every week. Thanks Pete and Mark for podcasting. Mark, a pleasure to have you back in this time zone. Or, you know what, let us know when you're fully back in this time zone, you know. And until next week, we'll be back with Overthinking a Podcast. Until that time, you can visit us on the web at I don't know why you would, but you can visit us on the web at overthinkingit.com, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve.
You know, one of these days, I'm just going to put up another blog post just so that you can't say we're not a blog anymore. I got one percolating about A Color of His Own by Leon Leone. And now it's about death. But they're all about death. Goodnight Moon's about death. The Big Red Barn's about death. Yeah, I could just go hard on all that stuff if you want, you know, capture that sweet Google AdWords revenue or whatever it is. I don't even know.